Good evening. This is Russ Werner, volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona, and tonight's host of Sports Today, the one-hour-long show that airs every Tuesday and Thursday evening from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. right here on Sun Sounds of Arizona. This edition is for Tuesday, February 11th, 2025. We are going to start off this evening with news from the Super Bowl. Eagles fly by Chiefs. Kansas City falls flat. Philadelphia prevents championship three-peat. This from USA Today. The birds have slain the beast, prevented history in the process, and turned in one of the most dominant Super Bowl performances of all time. The Philadelphia Eagles throttled the Kansas City Chiefs 40-22 on Sunday in Super Bowl 59 at Caesars Superdome to deny the Chiefs becoming the NFL's first-ever three-peat Super Bowl champions. The Eagles didn't let the Chiefs being on the brink of history, or last Super Bowl between the teams 2 years ago, a 38-35 loss for Philadelphia, affect their performance. Philadelphia snatched the pen to write his own version of history, and did the football equivalent of drawing on the Chiefs' forehead. Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes ran for his life all game, and the Eagles' defense deserves the credit for making him jumpy from the start. Josh Sweat led the team with 2.5 sacks, and Milton Williams had 2. The team's 6 sacks were one of the Super Bowl record for the most sacks in a game. Williams' strip sack of Mahomes in the fourth quarter, which he recovered, was the exclamation point on the commanding defensive effort. Mahomes had 2 touchdown passes in the final 3 minutes to make the game appear closer than it really ever was. Eagles quarterback Jalen Hurts, aside from 1 ill-advised interception while facing a free blitzer, played with poise and finished 17 for 22 passing for 221 yards with 2 touchdowns to go with 1 rushing score. He was the game's leading rusher with 72 yards on the ground on 11 attempts. After the Eagles took over on downs late in the third quarter, he found Devontae Smith 4 catches for 69 yards on a go route down the seam for a 46-yard touchdown to make it 34-0. Running back Saquon Barkley, who set the all-time record for rushing yards in a season, including playoffs, during the game, did not unleash a breakout run as he's done all postseason, sometimes multiple times in those games. He finished with 57 rushing yards on 25 carries, but caught a team-high 6 passes for 40 yards. It marked his first time since Week 15 of the regular season without more than 100 rushing yards in a game. The Chiefs went from the verge of cementing themselves as the team's most prolific dynasty to facing the prospect of becoming the first team to be shut out on the world's biggest stage. Kansas City started 0-for-8 on third down, and Xavier Worthy caught the team's first touchdown to make it 34-6 with 34 seconds left in the third quarter. Down in the field, Mahomes had nobody to throw to. Travis Kelce had 4 receptions for 39 yards. He was a non-factor. His first catch came with 3 minutes remaining in the third quarter and the game already decided. And the lack of rushing attack was one of several factors that allowed the Eagles' pass rushers to tee off on Mahomes all game. Mahomes showed up to the stadium Sunday wearing an Eagles shade of green, but it was the Eagles' defense that had him feeling green. Eagles rookie cornerback Cooper DeJean, celebrating his 22nd birthday Sunday, returned an interception, the first of his career, for a touchdown halfway through the second quarter to make it 17-0 after the Eagles' teammates had sacked Mahomes on the previous 2 plays. 2 series later, Zach Bond intercepted Mahomes, feeling pressure again, over the middle to give the Eagles the ball back at the Kansas City 14-yard line with 1:45 left in the half. Hurts found a wide-open A.J. Brown for a 12-yard touchdown 2 plays later, and the blowout was in force 24-0 with 95 seconds remaining until halftime. Over the first 30 minutes, the Eagles completely suffocated the defending champs. The Eagles had 1 first down on their first drive at halftime, with Mahomes sacked 3 times. Kansas City had 23 net yards of offense. Meanwhile, Philadelphia had 179 net yards and ran nearly twice as many plays, 39 to 20, and held possession twice as long. The 24-point lead was the steepest margin at halftime in Super Bowl history. Not much change for the better for the Chiefs in the second half. Once again, the Eagles sacked Mahomes on consecutive plays to force a punt. Both teams punted following their first offensive possessions of the game. An offensive pass interference penalty on Brown as the Eagles converted a 4th-and-2 did no favors to the narrative, which the NFL tried to dispel the entire week, that the Chiefs receive preferential treatment from the referees. However, Brown shoved his left hand into Chiefs cornerback Trent McDuffie's helmet to trigger the flag. The Eagles were on the other side of flag luck when Hurts overthrew Dallas Goedert on 3rd-and-5, but the tight end took a shot to the helmet from McDuffie to keep the drive alive. The scoring then began as Hurts found Joe Dotson for a 27-yard touchdown to the 1-yard line, and Philadelphia executed his patented tush-push for a 6-point lead with 6:15 left in the first quarter. Kicker Jake Elliott made all 4 of his field goal attempts from 48, 29, 48, and 50 yards to round out the scoring for Philadelphia. The Chiefs were undisciplined penalty-wise. Notably, Nick Bolton's penalty for unnecessary roughness for nailing Barkley in the back following an incompletion with the Eagles backed up toward the end of the first half. The vastly pro-Philadelphia crowd was persistent throughout the day in the Big Easy, starting E-A-G-L-E-S chants more than 2 hours before kickoff. Those fans also made their disdain of the Chiefs well known throughout Sunday, from player introductions to the cheerleaders receiving a bombardment of boos while descending an escalator to field level. By the fourth quarter, they mockingly performed the tomahawk chop Chiefs fans do in support of their team. And they went into the New Orleans night chanting as champs for the second time in 8 seasons. And in a side note, Eagles quarterback Hurts wins Super Bowl MVP. This is from Reuters. A poised performance earned Philadelphia Eagles quarterback Jalen Hurts his first Super Bowl MVP award on Sunday, after leading his team to a 40-22 revenge win over the Kansas City Chiefs in New Orleans on Sunday. Hurts left the NFL title game 2 years ago in a flurry of Chiefs red and gold confetti and refused to let history repeat itself at the Superdome, throwing for 221 yards and 2 touchdowns with another score on the ground as well. "I've just been able to use every experience and learn from it, the good, the bad, all of it, use it as fuel to pursue my greatness," said Hurts, who has led the Eagles to the playoffs in all 4 of his seasons as a starter in Philadelphia. "Just can't wait to enjoy this with my family and soak it in." The 2-time Pro Bowler plowed into the end zone behind his powerful offensive line to get the scoring started in the first quarter with his team's signature move, the brotherly shove. Hurts' only real blunder of the evening came early in the second quarter, as he threw a goal line interception, but it had no real impact on the game as the Chiefs were forced to punt onto their next possession. Hurts connected with receiver A.J. Brown for another score with less than 2 minutes left in the first half and threw a 46-yard dime to Devonta Smith to make it 33-0 late in the third quarter. Hurts was nimble against the blitz and slipped 17 yards past the Kansas City defense to set up the third of kicker Jake Elliott's 4 successful field goal attempts early in the fourth. It was the Eagles' 2nd Super Bowl title after they beat the New England Patriots in 2018. Now over to some basketball with the NBA Phoenix Suns. Too much Jokic and Murray as the Nuggets romp. This is from Saturday, Nuggets 122, Suns 105. By Dwayne Rankin of the Arizona Republic. The shorthanded Phoenix Suns didn't have enough energy or firepower to keep up with the surging Denver Nuggets in Saturday's 122-105 loss before a sellout crowd of 17,071 at Footprint Center. Jamal Murray and 3-time NBA MVP Nikola Jokic combined for 56 points in leading the Nuggets, who were 34-19, to a sixth straight win. Murray led all scorers with 30, going 6 of 9 from 3. Devin Booker paced the Suns, who were 26-26, with 24 points in the second of back-to-back games. Coming off an overtime win Friday against Utah, Phoenix trailed by as many as 23 points to the Nuggets, who were without Michael Porter Jr. with a hamstring. Kevin Durant with an ankle and Bradley Beal with a toe remained out for the Suns, while Grayson Allen missed Saturday's game with left knee soreness after being the hero in Friday's overtime win over Utah. Allen hit 7 threes Friday, including one at the buzzer to end regulation and force overtime. Durant has missed Phoenix's last 3 games, while Beal hasn't played the last 2. Here are some takeaways from Saturday's loss as the Suns return to action tonight against Memphis, who is 35-17, to end a 3-game homestand. First play-in Suns, currently 9th in the West. Phoenix would have to win 2 games in the play-in tournament just to make the playoffs if it started today. The Suns have 31 games to rise above those unwanted one-and-done conditions. Just look at the 7-12 teams: the Los Angeles Clippers, Dallas Mavericks, Phoenix Suns, Golden State Warriors, Sacramento Kings, and San Antonio Spurs. The Suns are actually 7-4 against those teams. They're 3-0 against the Clippers, 2-1 against the Mavs and Warriors, 0-2 against the Kings, and 1-0 against the Spurs. But those squads have made some major changes. The Mavs traded Luka Doncic and acquired Anthony Davis, who posted 26 points, 16 rebounds, 7 assists, and 3 blocks in 31 minutes of his Dallas debut on Saturday. Davis left the game with quad and groin tightness, though. He had a history of injuries. He'll be fine, so will the Mavs, who beat Houston 116-105, as Max Christie, who also came over from the Lakers, scored 23 off the bench. Kawhi Leonard is still rounding into form for the Clippers, who landed Ben Simmons after he cleared waivers. The Warriors got the guy Phoenix wanted, Jimmy Butler. The Kings now have Zach Levine in a trade with the Chicago Bulls, and the Spurs, who landed De'Aaron Fox, in return to pair up with their phenom 7-footer Victor Wembanyama. The Suns can be formidable when fully healthy, but matchups are everything in the play-in. They shouldn't want any part of a win-or-go-home scenario. Bol Bol shines again. Future minutes? It feels like the same storyline for Bol Bol every year. He hardly plays, then gets a chance mostly due to injuries. He produces, the crowd goes crazy, guys return, and back to the bench for Bol. The 7-footer may be the only guy who can hit the 3, run the floor for a dunk, throw a behind-the-back pass for an open 3.5, and then not play for a month. He posted a second strong game Saturday with a season-high 19 points, 7 rebounds, and 4 blocks after scoring 12 points in Friday's overtime win. His defensive liability to guard on the perimeter and lack of physicality inside has often kept him out of the rotation. Bol can certainly score on all 3 levels, runs the floor, and is a fan favorite, home or away. The Suns needed him to play with Durant out. When Durant returns and the team is full strength, will coach Mike Budenholzer keep Bol in the rotation? His answer? Bol has certainly been impressive, and I think he earned it. We have to seriously consider how we can keep him in games and see how he can impact the game some, even when we're whole. Frank Vogel had to answer the same question last season. Again, this is nothing new, unless Bol plays consistent minutes the rest of the regular season. Now what the Suns said after the loss: Mike Budenholzer on being outscored 35-26 to trail 98-81. Jokic and Murray in the 2-man game are a handful, and then the group around them made enough plays, made enough shots. Tyus Jones on Bol Bol's performance: he played extremely well, was ready when his name was called, created an opportunity. He affects the game in so many ways. He's so unique, uses his length extremely well, can shoot the three, offensive rebounds, blocks, you know, being active on defense. He just affected the game in so many different ways, so just proud of him for staying ready for when his opportunity came. And in a related article, the GM says, Suns can regain focus in final 30 games. Maybe the Phoenix Suns have been bored for the first 50 games? That's a question. Suns general manager James Jones is way too polished ever to say that. But that's what I heard when he suggested that his team was capable of locking in for the final 30 games or so and securing a playoff spot. We haven't performed well enough, he said in a news conference before Phoenix defeated the Utah Jazz 135-127 in overtime and at Footprint Center on Friday night. Jones said the team has had glimpses of success, but injuries and inconsistency have been the biggest problem dragging down a team that was considered a title contender before the season started. The last 30 or so games of the year give us an opportunity to focus on maximizing what we do with those guys and around those guys, Jones said. And I'm confident that the end of the season, the goal that we're chasing will help us crystallize and focus a little bit more on the details that will put us in a better position. In other words, they stop paying attention for long stretches and lose games they should have been winning. Now that they're down to the wire, the pressure will keep them focused. So, can the Suns coast all semester and then ace the final? Sure, why not? It'll be a bigger comeback story than Drake winning a Grammy next year for a song apologizing to Kendrick Lamar. But anything is possible. It's a long shot, to be sure. The Suns at this point aren't even certain to be a playoff team. I don't project what needs to be done in the postseason, Jones said. We have to get there. That's our focus. Get to the postseason. Once you get to the postseason, we'll be a different team. At that point, you're taking it one game at a time, one series at a time. But maybe it's not as bleak as it sounds. The Suns are a veteran squad, and Devin Booker and Kevin Durant have a ton of playoff experience. Nick Richards is playing with energy that Yusuf Nurkic didn't have, and Bradley Beal's role as a scorer off the bench should be more clear, with Vasilije Micic playing next to him in the backcourt. Micic's combination of size and ball handling is something we can use on the perimeter, Jones said. He said later, we've had moments where we've used Brad as a backup ball handler. We thought that Micic would give us an opportunity to give someone who's naturally at that position a crack at some minutes. Mostly, the Suns won't face the challenge of integrating a new star. Luka Doncic might make the Lakers better, although he and LeBron James have overlapping skills, and this sort of duplication rarely works well in the NBA. Anthony Davis might make Dallas better, although Kyrie Irving hasn't been the number one ball handler for a team since he was in Boston, a stint that didn't go well. And Jimmy Butler might make Golden State better, although Golden Year's Warriors might best describe a team with a core of guys who will all be 35 or older when the playoffs start. But each of these teams is going to need to make huge adjustments, if not play a completely different style of basketball at the most critical part of the season. The Suns will have the benefit of continuity, which sounds crazy to say about a team that's had three head coaches in 3 years. They know how they want to play, and despite injuries, the Big Three has had plenty of time together. They know how it's supposed to look when it's clicking, sort of like overtime against Utah, driving kicks, make three-pointers, energy on the defensive glass. The final stretch is going to be a sprint. Six teams are within about 3 games of each other at the bottom of the Western Conference playoff standings. Leave it to Vegas to sort out the odds, but I sure do like a team that runs through Durant, Booker, and Beal. And if Jones is right that the team just needed a shot of adrenaline, it's going to be a lot of fun around here for the next 2 months. That was an editorial by Arizona Republic columnist Greg Moore. And in the NBA roundup, there were only three games on the slate for Sunday. Bucks used three-point barrage to beat 76ers. Damian Lillard scored a season-high 43 points to lead the Milwaukee Bucks to a 135-127 victory over the visiting Philadelphia 76ers on Sunday afternoon. Lillard added 7 rebounds and 8 assists for Milwaukee, which played without All-Star Giannis Antetokounmpo, strained left calf. 6 other Bucks scored in double figures, led by 23 from reserve Gary Trent Jr., who shot 7 of 15 from three-point range. Lillard went 8 of 15 from distance as Milwaukee made a season-high 24 three-pointers on 55 attempts. That's 43.6%. Tyrese Maxey led Philadelphia with 39 points, and Joel Embiid bundled 27 points with 12 rebounds and 6 assists. Gershon Yabusele added 18 points, while Paul George contributed 12 points, 6 assists, and 3 steals. Antetokounmpo will be sidelined for at least one more week and will miss the NBA All-Star game due to the calf strain, ESPN reported on Sunday. Per the report, the power forward is expected to return to action shortly after the All-Star break. The All-Star game is scheduled to be played February 16th in San Francisco. Next, we have Rockets 94, Raptors 87. Dylan Brooks scored a team-high 19 points. Jalen Green added 18, and the shorthanded Houston Rockets rode a strong performance from their reserves to a victory over the visiting Toronto Raptors, snapping a 6-game skid. Green drilled a pair of three-pointers in the fourth quarter and added 9 rebounds to help Houston rally from a double-digit deficit. The Rockets posted a 43-31 edge in bench points with reserves Jock Landale, 11 points, 10 rebounds, Jeff Green, a season-high 14 points, and Cam Whitmore, 11 points, all contributing to the cause. Emmanuel Quickley paired a game-high 20 points with 8 assists, while Scotty Barnes tallied 15 points, 9 rebounds, and 7 assists for the Raptors. Rookie Jamal Sheed added 14 points off the bench. And finally, Pistons 112, Hornets 102. Cade Cunningham recorded a triple-double with 19 points, 12 assists, and 10 rebounds, and the Detroit Pistons never trailed while earning a victory over the visiting Charlotte Hornets. Tobias Harris had 20 points, and Malik Beasley supplied 17, as the Pistons won their second straight after 2 losses. Jalen Duren racked up 16 points, 12 rebounds, and 6 assists, while Asur Thompson added 16 points and 8 rebounds. Miles Bridges led the Hornets with 30 points and 9 rebounds. Seth Curry supplied 26 points, and Isaiah Wong tossed in 17. Charlotte was without LaMelo Ball. He was out with an ankle injury. Now over to some college basketball, starting with the University of Arizona Wildcats. Arizona men's basketball. Cats take down the Red Raiders. Vassar and Bryant shine versus Texas Tech as Townsend sits out with a concussion. This is by Bruce Pasco of the Arizona Daily Star. The emergence of Henry Vassar and Carter Bryant in the Big 12 play gave Arizona coach Tommy Lloyd some good choices to have. Does Lloyd swap one of those high-ceiling players into his starting lineup, significantly redistribute minutes, or just keep riding a rotation that had won 12 of 13 games before Saturday, in part because the pieces finally started fitting together? Lloyd mostly didn't budge until Saturday when his hand was forced. Starting power forward Trey Townsend sat out UA's game with Texas Tech, and the Wildcats still led almost throughout their 82-73 win at McHale Center, avenging their only loss of the Big 12 season. Lloyd started Bryant while giving Vassar a career-high 30 minutes off the bench, sometimes even playing the Estonian 7-footer along with low-post mainstay Tobe Awaka for a particularly rugged inside combo. Result? While the Wildcats were out-rebounded by 16 at Texas Tech 3 weeks earlier with Townsend in the lineup, they out-rebounded the Red Raiders by 13 this time. "I didn't think they missed a beat with the injury, honestly," Texas Tech coach Grant McCashlin said. "I mean, maybe they had some even better minutes and categories because they had a different lineup out there. with them playing four guards and then going with those two bigs, it was tough to deal with over the course of the game. They were two vastly different looks that were made necessary by Townsend's absence and by Lloyd's memory of how the Wildcats were badly out-touched in Lubbock. "When Trey goes out, our rotation changes a little bit," Lloyd said. "To be honest with you, I did not know Trey wasn't going to play until closer to the game, and one of those things we were practicing initially was playing the two big lineup. I just thought it would be important this game. I thought we got crushed on the glass so bad by these guys last time." Asked during his pregame news conference Friday about the status of Townsend and Awaka, who was poked in the eye at BYU 4 days earlier, Lloyd said, "I think we're business as usual. I don't think there's anything that's come out of it at all." Townsend had fallen backwards on his head early in the second half of Arizona's 85-74 win at BYU on Tuesday, but did not develop concussion symptoms until after he returned to Tucson. UA did not announce anything of Townsend's status during the week, and Lloyd declined to go into much detail when asked what changed between Friday's press conference and Saturday's game. "All this medical stuff is way beyond me," Lloyd said. Townsend wasn't on the UA bench during Saturday's game, suggesting a protocol or preference to avoid light and or noise, while Lloyd said he wasn't sure if Townsend would return Tuesday at Kansas State. If not, maybe even so, Bryant and Vassar are likely to be leaned on more heavily again. Bryant wound up playing only 22 minutes Saturday because of foul trouble, but he picked up 6 rebounds and scored 4 points while helping in some ways that didn't show up in the box score. "I was worried about Carter and the fouls today, playing against a guy like TTU's Darian Williams, who was really experienced," Lloyd said. "It'll be a great lesson for Carter. I think there's going to be some really good things to watch in film, but there was also a lot of possessions where Carter's length and athleticism and effort impacted the game. I thought Carter blended into the game brilliantly." Vassar's impact was even more obvious. He scored 15 points on 6-for-10 shooting, hitting a 3-pointer in the first half, while collecting 8 rebounds, 2 blocks, and a steal. All that from a guy who went scoreless with 2 rebounds while missing all 4 shots he took at Texas Tech on January 18th, one of many reasons the Wildcats suffered their only Big 12 loss that day. "I'm sure that was in the back of his memory," Awaka said, "but knowing him, he's a guy that gets over things really quickly. Just the way that he bounced back today was great." Awaka said it's been amazing how much Vassar has progressed since he arrived at Arizona last summer as a transfer from Tennessee, and that he's an even greater person off the court. "Maybe that bodes well for the Wildcats, because Lloyd indicated he might put Vassar and Awaka on the floor more often, too, in the same way he once envisioned he might pair 7'2 sophomore Mo Crevis with another center before he was sidelined for the season with a foot-slash-ankle injury in December. We were planning on playing two bigs to start out the season, and when Mo gets hurt and things change," Lloyd said, "I definitely think Henry and Tobey playing together could be something we can see down the stretch of the season. I think there's a lot of advantages to it. Tobey did a great job defensively, no matter what position he played today. I thought Henry was really impactful around the rim, changing shots, and then coming up with rebounds around the basket." Before long, Lloyd will reinsert Townsend into that mix again. It may be different this time, or maybe Townsend will be different. Townsend had averaged only 5.5 points and 4.3 rebounds in his last 4 games, though he left the BYU game after just 11 minutes because of the concussion. "Trey is an important piece to our puzzle, and he's a winner," Lloyd said. "He's a high-character guy, and maybe this little break tending to his concussion will help reset him a little bit and allow him to rest up and finish strong. That would be my hope." The number 20 Arizona Wildcats at 17-6, 11-1 in the Big 12, are playing tonight at Kansas State, who is 12-11, 6-6 in conference. And that will lead us up to about our halfway point in this evening's Sports Today. And over at ASU men's basketball, Shorthanded ASU falls at Oklahoma State. This is by Michelle Gardner of the Arizona Republic. It's been a tough season for the Arizona State Sun Devils, and just when you think it can't get any worse, it has. The Sun Devils trekked here for a Super Bowl Sunday showdown against Oklahoma State, a team that entered the contest with a same Big 12 record, 3-8, as the Sun Devils, and were dealt an 86-73 setback at Gallagher-Abba Arena. Coach Bobby Hurley normally has a rotation of 8 players, but was so shorthanded that his son Bobby, who has played 7 minutes in 3 previous games this season and played only 20 all of last season, saw 15 minutes. Trevor Best, the 17-year-old who could still be in high school, played 4 minutes, while walk-on Connor Braun got into the game only long enough to break a sweat before leaving with a shoulder injury. The reason for the lineup chaos was the loss of starting guards Adam Miller and B.J. Freeman, who had to sit. Both drew flagrant 2 fouls in the previous 2 games, which warranted ejections from those contests. Freeman's came in the loss to rival Arizona, while Miller's came in the loss to Kansas State. Miller's suspension was NCAA mandated because it came under the category of fighting because he slapped an opposing player. Freeman's did not fall under that category, but his suspension came from Hurley for what the school is calling conduct detrimental to the team. Miller made the trip but was not on the bench with the team. Freeman did not make the trip. Hurley said both will be back for Wednesday's game at number 13, Texas Tech. Another blow came midway through the first half when freshman phenom Jaden Quaintance, who has 6 double-doubles on the season, aggravated an ankle injury that sidelined him for 1 game. He left in the first half after playing just 9 minutes. ASU has had its starting lineup intact for only 5 of its 12 conference games. Josen Sanon was injured in the Big 12 opener against BYU and missed 5 games. It's frustrating. We have guys out for non-injury stuff, and that's on us. But we also had one of our key guys get hurt, he said. I feel like we've been dealing with this since the BYU game when Sanon got hurt. He showed signs that he's moving better, and I think he'll get better as the year goes on. We're just plugging our finger in a dam this whole Big 12 schedule with guys in and out of the lineup for various reasons. Despite the revolving door, Hurley saw a bright spot in the way his players battled. Hurley said there were games this season the team won in which it did not play with much intensity. This was as good as we played and competed, he said. We won games and not competed as hard as we did today. Proud of the team. The guys that we did have on the floor, down 3 starters, virtually the whole game, and had no bench, and we were doing things we hadn't done all year, sit in a zone and different things. I told the guys I respect them and how hard they played. ASU trailed by as many as 19 points, 59-40 in the second half. They pulled to within 8 points 4 times and 7 once, 71-66, on a 3-point play by Bashir Jihad with 6:34 to go, but each time Oklahoma State answered with a bucket. The flaws that have been apparent all season were again an issue for ASU, tallied 12 turnovers with the Cowboys scoring 17 off of those. The Sun Devils averaging 13 turnovers per game and 9 in the first half, but only 3 in the second. ASU at 12-11, 3-9 in conference, was being out-rebounded even before Quaintance went out. The Cowboys at 12-11, 4-8 in the Big 12, finished with a 46-34 lead in that department. Oklahoma State also had 32 points in the paint to ASU's 16. Senior point guard Alston Mason played all 40 minutes and led ASU with a season-high 25 points, which included a 7-for-7 from the line. He also had 5 rebounds and 3 steals. Sanon had 17 points, shooting 7-for-20 from the field and 5-for-6 from the line. Hurley was asked about Sanon's shot selection and said he was okay with it and, in fact, wanted him to shoot more and that no shot was a bad shot from him. Freshman Amir Ali played a season-high 35 minutes and notched his first career double-double with 12 points and 10 rebounds. Mason said Hurley underscores the need to stay composed and not let the tensions of the game get to the team. "Any game we go into, we think we can win," Mason said. "So it was big for us to motivate our guys, make sure they had the right mindset, and to try and come out and play hard." Again, their next game is Wednesday, tomorrow, at number 13, Texas Tech. And on the women's side, ASU played at Arizona on Saturday. U of A swats down ASU in physical matchup. This is by P.J. Brown of the Arizona Daily Star. "It looks like all Arizona needed to get back on track was a good old rivalry game. It was ugly, no doubt about that, but UA took over in the fourth quarter to defeat ASU 66-59 at McHale Center on Saturday afternoon in front of 8,370 fans. Arizona stopped its two-game losing streak to improve to 15-10, 6-6 in the Big 12. ASU is 8-16, 2-10 in the conference, extending its losing skid to 9 games. This one was the typical rock fight. Arizona took a 28-24 lead into halftime, but it turned into one of those gritted-out battles. It all ticked up a notch in the third quarter, as there were 15 fouls called, ASU had 8, Arizona 7, and bodies were flying. After taking a slim 3-point lead into the fourth quarter, ASU tied the game up at 44 each, just seconds into the final frame. The Sun Devils weren't giving an inch. Then it was the Wildcats' turn as the duo of Brea Cunningham and Jada Williams took over. Williams knocked down a 3. Cunningham scored on a layup. Williams blocked a shot that ended up in Cunningham's hands. What followed was the sophomore connection. A quick pass from Williams to Cunningham down low, who finished. In a little more than 3 minutes, UA led 51-44. ASU hadn't scored a field goal in more than 4 minutes. In the end, Arizona just wanted it more. After getting 2 fouls in the first half, Cunningham didn't let it bother her the rest of the way. In the fourth quarter, she scored 9 points and finished with 16 points and 8 rebounds. Williams chipped in 18 points, 7 rebounds, 3 assists, and 2 steals. Isis Bay was the steady aggressor from the tip, going up for offensive rebounds, scoring, and disrupting on defense. She was forcing turnovers, getting jump balls, and making it difficult for the Sun Devils. She finished with 8 points, 5 assists, and a steal. Freshman Lauren Swan came off the bench and found her shooting touch, helping to propel the Wildcats in the first half. After being a bit rusty in her previous 2 games coming off of a concussion, Swan knew exactly when to let it fly. She scored 10 points in 10 minutes of action, 3 of 8 from the field, and 2 threes. On an inbounds play under her own basket in the first quarter, Williams passed to Paulina Paris, who drove to the hoop for a score. Then, Montea Du stole 2 of ASU's inbound passes on back-to-back plays, leading to easy baskets from Williams and Jones and giving UA an early 12-4 lead. The Wildcats shot 40% and held the Sun Devils to 31%. Arizona also scored 19 points off 15 Arizona State turnovers. Both the University of Arizona women and the ASU women play on this Wednesday next game. Arizona plays at Oklahoma State, and ASU will be at UCF. And over at GCU, the men's team lost on Saturday at California Baptist, 85-71. Their next game will be this Thursday at Tarleton State, and again on Saturday at UT Arlington. And the women, on Saturday at home against California Baptist, won 84-55. They will play Thursday at home versus Tarleton State and Saturday at home against UT Arlington. And up in Flagstaff at NAU this past weekend on Thursday, their men's team defeated Montana State 69-64 at home, but then lost at home to Montana on Saturday 83-80. Their next games this Thursday at Portland State and Saturday at Sacramento State. And over at the NAU women, on last Thursday, they lost 73-66 at Montana State, but won 96-76 at Montana on Saturday. Their next games will be this Thursday at home versus Portland State, and then Saturday at home against Sacramento State. And in some other scores from around the women's top 25 roundup, Texas ends South Carolina's win streak. Madison Booker racked up 20 points and number 6 Texas beat number 2 South Carolina 66-62 on Sunday in Austin, Texas, ending the Gamecocks' 57-game Southeastern Conference regular season winning streak dating back to 2021. In other games, it was number 1 UCLA 62, Oregon 52, number 3 Notre Dame 91, number 21 California 52, number 5 UConn 77, Providence 40, number 4 LSU 82, number 17 Tennessee 77, number 12 Duke 90, Miami 49, number 13 North Carolina 53, Clemson 51, number 14 North Carolina State 97, number 22 Florida State 74, number 15 Maryland 81, Washington 73, number 19 Georgia Tech 71, Boston College 51, Michigan 71, number 20 Michigan State 61, and number 23 Alabama 80, Mississippi State 60. And now over to some softball news from the University of Arizona. Wildcats shut out UW at Candrea Classic. That's by P.J. Brown of the Arizona Daily Star. Arizona was on a mission. The Wildcats had one blemish over the weekend, and it needed to avenge Friday's loss to former Pac-12 foe Washington. On Sunday, number 17 Arizona had their chance, with a little extra meaning to this game. All aspects of the Wildcats' performance, pitching, defense, and hitting, were on fire. They were more than ready for this grudge match rematch and defeated the Huskies 4-0 on a two-hit complete game shutout from Devon Nets at Hillenbrand Stadium in the final day of the Candrea Classic. Arizona is now 5-1, while UW drops to 2-3. This weekend, the Wildcats beat some of the top teams in the country, including number 11 Alabama and a Washington team that is getting votes in the USA softball poll and ranked number 22 in the NFCA poll. I think it doesn't honestly matter who's over there, as long as the Wildcats are handling their business, Arizona coach Caitlin Lowe said. That's what they figured out after Friday, was if we can take care of what we do best, then we can beat anyone in the country. It's less worrying about who's in the other dugout, and they just chipped away at the game. Over the weekend, Nets delivered with her hitting, knocking 3 home runs and driving in 7 runs in Thursday's opener against Michigan State. On Sunday, she helped her team with her arm. Nets, who had a rocky outing loss to Washington on Friday night, came out on fire. She struck out 4 batters in the first 4 innings and didn't give up a hit until that same inning, a double to right center Gap. She was dealing, pitched a complete game, giving up no walks, 9 strikeouts, 1 hit batter with 84 total pitches. At the end of the day, she had decreased her ERA from 11.2 to 2.15. Both Lowe and Nets said it was all about the do-it-all redshirt senior giving herself a little grace. After all, these are the first moments of her final year after sitting out last season with a back injury. Nets admitted she didn't sleep well after that loss. With a tighter zone than the other day, Lowe said Nets was excellent, and I think you saw her passion come through. It didn't hurt that Nets could rely on the incredible defense behind her. 2 plays stood out. In the 4th inning after that double, center fielder Reagan Shockey caught a fly ball and threw a perfect strike to Jenna Stephen at 3rd to get the runner and get out of the inning unscathed. In the 5th, after giving up an infield hit, Kiki Escobar delivered an unassisted double play by driving for a hot shot off the bat of Riley Pershek and getting back to first before the runner, Giselle Alvarez. Nets would strike out the next batter to end the inning. Arizona didn't waste any time attacking the Huskies. In the first inning, Dakota Kennedy, who was 3-for-3 with 3 runs scored, hit her first double of the season, a gapper to left center. After Reagan Shockey popped up to the catcher, Kaya Altmaier hit her own double to left to score Kennedy. This was followed by an RBI single to center by Cindy Stewart to give the Wildcats a 2-0 lead after one inning. The Wildcats tacked on runs in the third and fifth innings to go up 4-0. Over the weekend, the Wildcats found different ways to win from a 5-inning rout of 15-0 in the first game against Michigan State on Thursday, to squeezing out a 10-9 win in the second game on clutch hitting. They also had dominant wins over Western Michigan and Alabama with a walk-off from Altmyer. Their next games will be this coming weekend in the Bear Down Fiesta at Hillebrand Stadium. Thursday, they play South Alabama. Friday, they have two games, one against Cal State Fullerton, and then against South Alabama again. Then Saturday, they play against Ohio, and Sunday, again against Cal State Fullerton. The University of Arizona men's baseball kicks off their season this coming weekend in the Shriners Children's College Showdown at Arlington, Texas. Friday, they'll play Ole Miss. Saturday, they play number 15 Clemson, and Sunday, they will play Louisville. And over at ASU softball, softball rallies past Cal to claim Kajikawa Classic title. Holtsche go-ahead homer provides the difference as Brown dominates in the circle. Sun Devil softball closed out the 20th edition of the Kajikawa Classic with a super performance against California to earn a 6-4 win. The win secured the Kajikawa Classic title for the 9th time. Lillian Holtsche hit a go-ahead pinch-hit home run in the bottom of the 6th inning to provide the difference in the win. Kenzie Brown then closed the door in the 7th, with Nahanda Lewis making a catch at the wall in the left to cap a 3-1 weekend for the Sun Devils. Cal, ranked number 21 in the ESPN USA Today poll, scored 4 runs in the top of the 4th to open the scoring. ASU quickly responded with 3 runs in the bottom of the frame behind a Kelsey Hall RBI single and a 2-run knock from Hayden Allen. Tanya Wendell tied the game in the bottom of the 5th inning with a solo shot to right for her 2nd home run of the weekend. A pitch hit to Kaya Davis to open the ASU 6th, and 2 batters later, Holtsche delivered the heroics with a home run that was also her first career hit. Brown entered the game with 2 outs and a runner on first in the Cal 3rd. She proceeded to shut down the opposing offense, allowing 1 hit with 5 strikeouts the rest of the way for her first win of the season. Wendell had 3 hits and scored 2 runs. Hall and Allen added 2 hits apiece as the Sun Devils totaled 12 hits as a team. They also have a busy weekend coming up for the 2025 Littlewood Classic in Tempe, Arizona. On Thursday, they will play Oregon. Friday, they'll play North Dakota and Weber State. Saturday, they play Washington and Belmont. And on Sunday, they will play Utah Valley. And ASU men's baseball gets underway this coming weekend. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, they will play Ohio State at Phoenix Municipal Stadium. And in some golf news, this from Golf Week. Dietrich wins WM Phoenix Open in a runaway. With his lead slipping away, Thomas Dietrich struck the shot of the final round to win the WM Phoenix Open for his first PGA Tour victory on Sunday. "It's incredible," Dietrich said. "It's what dreams are made of." A back nine charge from Daniel Berger had trimmed Dietrich's lead to 2 shots momentarily, before he dialed in a 9-iron from 180 yards that bounced once on the green, hopped, and spun to a stop inside 2 feet from the hole to set up a birdie. "Everything he's doing is obviously very good. He should keep doing that," said Justin Thomas, who finished tied for 6th and was commentating on CBS Sports. "That's why he's leading the tournament, and I'm sitting here done for the week." Dietrich closed with birdies on the final 4 holes to shoot 6-under 65 at TPC Scottsdale and beat Michael Kim and Berger by 7 strokes. The 32-year-old Dietrich, the 2016 Big Ten champion for Illinois, was steadily improving up the ranks since turning pro, but victory had been elusive. The 2-time Belgian Olympics' only previous win by 12 strokes on the DP World Tour's Challenge Tour. Dietrich built a commanding 5-stroke lead with rounds of 66, 64, and 65, but the likes of Jordan Spieth and world number 1 Scottie Scheffler were looming. Dietrich birdied two of the first three holes, a 12-footer at one, and a left-to-right bending 14-footer at three, around a bogey at the second. He strung together seven pars in a row before a birdie at 11 and was waltzing to victory, but not so fast. After a three-putt par at 13 and a string of three birdies by Berger, the last of which reduced Dietrich's lead down to two strokes, Dietrich drained his birdie putt at 15 and kept making birdies on his way to the clubhouse to finish with a 72-hole total of 24 under 260. Scheffler birdied four of his first six holes to jump up the leaderboard, but he could ill afford a bogey and made one at number 12. The wheels fell off and he came home in 41 to finish tied for 25th. Spieth closed in at 68 and finished tied for 4th, his best result since the WM Phoenix Open a year ago. Monday qualifier Will Chandler shot 66 and finished tied for 6th to earn a spot in the Mexico Open in 2 weeks. And in a side article on that from the WM Phoenix Open, big win for Thunderbirds. After last year's chaos at the Phoenix Open, players praise the balance of fun with the fans. This by Theo Mackey of the Arizona Republic. 2 days after the conclusion of last year's Phoenix Open, tournament organizers, known as the Thunderbirds, flew to Los Angeles to meet with the PGA Tour's Advisory Council for feedback. Players on the Advisory Council had already moved past the Phoenix Open in preparation for that week's Genesis Invitational, but the Thunderbirds knew they had to act quickly. Their tournament, carefully cultivated into an event without parallel, was at risk of losing its prestige. For years, the tournament had grown without repercussion. Its expanding stature brought only more fun. But in 2024, the bubble burst. 54 attendees were arrested, 3 times more than ever before. Rain turned hillsides into mud pits, creating overcrowding in dry areas. Players sparred with fans, then used reporters to amplify their complaints. The Thunderbirds probably need to do something about it, Zach Johnson said at the time. I'm assuming they're ashamed. All of that was the context with which this week began. As Thursday approached, tournament chairman Matt Mooney felt the pressure. There was only one chance to right the wrongs of 2024. 4 days later, everyone involved passed the test. Players outside the clubhouse, where they had shared their complaints a year earlier, praised the Thunderbirds. I thought it was well run as I've seen, said Gary Woodland, who has played the tournament 16 times. Playing in his 7th Phoenix Open, Sam Burns doesn't quite have that wealth of experience, but he has a unique perspective, having been in that meeting with the Thunderbirds last February. As soon as the meeting began, he could tell that the organizers were taking changes seriously. When you're trying to play golf, you expect a certain atmosphere, and I think at times it had gotten a little too out of control, Burns said. A little too much extracurricular stuff going on. A year later, he credited the Thunderbirds for finding an ideal balance between fun and sensibility. Everybody should still have fun, and it should still be rowdy out there, Burns said, but I think using common sense and not letting it get out of control is important. Over the first few months of their annual tournament preparation, Thunderbirds identified the changes that can make that balance a reality. They added a second entrance by the 18th tee to alleviate crowding and alter movement patterns. They built 4 new bridges between holes for players, reducing choke points. They added new pavement to path carts, widening walkways. They also removed a ticketing option that had permitted fans to choose which day they attended at the last moment. That enabled them to control crowds on a daily basis. Plus, ticket prices jumped from $50 to $75 on Thursday and Sunday, and from $75 to $125 on Friday and Saturday. Their tournament no longer announces attendance figures, but that drastic increase in pricing appeared to keep crowds at a more manageable level. All over the course, fans moved with ease. That didn't erase the party for which this tournament is known. When Emiliano Grillo sank a hole-in-one on the 16th on Friday, beer cups went flying as they always do. but there were not crowds of drunk fans interrupting the golf as occurred a year ago. The organizers also got some external help with 4 days of ideal weather. All over the course, fans agreed. Standing by the fifth green Sunday afternoon, Nick Berry had flown in from Oregon for the tournament. A self-described big fan of golf, Berry had never been to a PGA Tour event. He picked the Phoenix Open for its marriage of a party atmosphere with high-level golf. "We came down with a couple of other couples that are not big golf fans," Berry said, "but they want to come to this tournament just because they know it's a fun time in some way, shape, or form." When he arrived over the weekend, Berry said the tournament surpassed those expectations. "Great setup here," he said. A few holes over, John Lovejoy is a Phoenix Open veteran. He's been coming for years, often attending all 4 days. Last year, he said, was ugly. "The worst thing was walking out," Lovejoy said. "Because of only the one entrance, you were with all those crazy drunk people if you stayed till the end, and we did, and oh my gosh, it was brutal." Because of the increased prices, he attended only 3 days this year, but that was worth the trade-off for a more measured atmosphere. 10 times better, Lovejoy said, of course. "It helps not to have any rain, but last year was ridiculous. In 2025, there were no such complaints." And that's going to wrap up tonight's edition of Sports Today for Tuesday, February 11th, 2025. I'm Russ Werner, tonight's host of Sports Today and a volunteer leader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. Have a good evening and stay tuned for more. Don't forget, if you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org. Left-click on Broadcast Info and Audio. Then under Programming Links, left-click on Demand Podcast. Also, you can now listen to Sun Sounds on your Echo Dot or other smart home device.